Towards evening of that day, the Pequod was torn of her canvas, and Bear Pole was left to fight a typhoon which had struck her directly ahead. When darkness came on, sky and sea roared and split with thunder, and blazed with the lightning that showed the disabled mast fluttering here and there with the rags which the first fury of the tempest had left for its aftersport. "Here!" cried Starbuck, seizing Stubb by the shoulder and pointing his hand towards the weather bow. "Mark'st thou not that the gale comes from the eastward, the very course Ahab is to run for Moby Dick, the very course he swung to this day noon. Now mark his boat there. Where is that stove? In the stern sheets, man, where he is wont to stand. His standpoint is stove, man. Now jump overboard and sing away if thou must." "I don't half understand ye. What's in the wind?" At that moment, in one of the intervals of profound darkness, followed by the flashes, a voice was heard at his side, and almost at the same instant a volley of thunder peals rolled overhead.
"Who's there?"
"Oh, thunder!" said Ahab, groping his way along the bulwarks to his pivot hole, but suddenly finding his path made plain to him by elbowed lances of fire.
"The rods! The rods!"
cried Starbuck to the crew, suddenly admonished to vigilance by the vivid lightning that had just been darting flambeaux to light Ahab to his post. "Are they overboard? Drop them over, fore and aft, quick!"
"Avast!"
cried Ahab.
"Let's have fair play here, though we be the weaker side. Yet I'll contribute to raise rods on the Himalayas and Andes, that all the world may be secured. But out on privileges, let them be, sir."
"Look aloft!" cried Starbuck. "The corpuscence, the corpuscence!"
All the yardarms were tipped with a pallid fire, and touched at each tri-pointed lightning rod end with three tapering white flames. Each of the three tall masts was silently burning in that sulphurous air like three gigantic wax tapers before an altar. While this pallidness was burning aloft, few words were heard from the enchanted crew, who in one thick cluster stood on the forecastle, all their eyes gleaming in that pale phosphorescence, like a faraway constellation of stars. Relieved against the ghostly light, the gigantic jet negro, Dagoo, loomed up to thrice his real stature, and seemed the black cloud from which the thunder had come. The parted mouth of Tashtego revealed his shark-white teeth, which strangely gleamed as if they too had been tipped by corpuscence. While lit up by the preternatural light, Queequeg's tattooing burned like satanic blue flames on his body.
"The corpuscence have mercy on us all!" cried Stubb.
At the base of the mainmast, full beneath the doubloon and the flame, the Parsee was kneeling in Ahab's front, but with his head bowed away from him, while nearby, from the arched and overhanging rigging, where they had just been engaged securing a spar, a number of the seamen, arrested by the glare, now cohered together and hung pendulous, like a knot of numbed wasps from a drooping orchard twig. In various enchanted attitudes, like the standing or stepping or running skeletons in Herculaneum, others remain rooted to the deck, but all their eyes upcast.
"Aye, aye, men," cried Ahab. "Look up at it. Mark it well. The white flame but lights the way to the white whale. Hand me those mainmast links there. I would fain feel this pulse and let mine beat against it. Blood against fire, so!"
Then turning, the last link held fast in his left hand, he put his foot upon the Parsee, and with fixed upward eye and high-flung right arm, he stood erect before the lofty tri-pointed trinity of flames.
"The boat! The boat!" cried Starbuck. "Look at thy boat, old man!"
Ahab's harpoon, the one forged at Perth's fire, remained firmly lashed in its conspicuous crotch, so that it projected beyond his whaleboat's bow. But the sea that had stove its bottom had caused the loose leather sheath to drop off, and from the keen steel barb there now came a leveled flame of pale forked fire. As the silent harpoon burned there like a serpent's tongue, Starbuck grasped Ahab by the arm. God, God is against thee, old man, forbear. 'Tis an ill voyage, ill begun, ill continued. Let me square the yards while we may, old man, and make a fair wind of it homeward, to go on a better voyage than this. Overhearing Starbuck, the panic-stricken crew instantly ran to the braces, though not a sail was left aloft. For the moment all the aghast mate's thoughts seemed theirs. They raised a half-mutinous cry, but dashing the rattling lightning links to the deck and snatching the burning harpoon, Ahab waved it like a torch among them, swearing to transfix with it the first sailor that but cast loose a rope's end. Petrified by his aspect and still more shrinking from the fiery dart that he held, the men fell back in dismay, and Ahab again spoke.
All your oaths to hunt the white whale are as binding as mine. And heart, soul, and body, lungs, and life, old Ahab is bound. And that ye may know to what tune this heart beats, look ye here, thus I blow out the last fear.
And with one blast of his breath, he extinguished the flame. During the most violent shocks of the typhoon, the man at the Pequod's jawbone tiller had several times been reelingly hurled to the deck by its spasmodic motions, even though preventer tackles had been attached to it, for they were slack, because some play to the tiller was indispensable. In a severe gale like this, while the ship is but a tossed shuttlecock to the blast, it is by no means uncommon to see the needles in the compasses, at intervals, go round and round. It was thus with the Pequod's. At almost every shock, the helmsman had not failed to notice the whirling velocity with which they revolved upon the cards. It is a sight that hardly anyone can behold without some sort of unwonted emotion.